Tell me, how many of you can understand Sanskrit?
Zero.
Yes? No, no. You can understand Sanskrit, no? Even those who don't understand Sanskrit can understand the translation, no? So, if something is spoken in Sanskrit and again translated, there is no problem. This chapter number 2 that we are doing is in a sense a summary of the whole book in many respects. That is why even if you spend some time on this chapter, it would be very worthwhile. So, I don't want to run through very quickly, but explain several important points which are there in this chapter. We have seen first of all the concept of Buddhi Yoga. In fact, when Sri Krishna begins to answer the questions of Arjuna, he expounds to Arjuna certain statements of knowledge which are directly related to Buddhi Yoga. If one practices Buddhi Yoga, then whatever is stated by him about the self, about its immutability, about its being utterly silent, in which there is no movement, and whatever movements are there are divine movements, not the movements of ordinary Triguna, of the three modes of nature. This is the knowledge that you can get if you utilize your buddhi in the right manner. That is to say, buddhi has the right manner of discriminating. The buddhi is brought up to a point where it can discriminate between two elements in us. One is quiet and another is turbulent. The moment you discriminate between the two, you begin to enter into the true knowledge of that which is immobile and quiet, that which is immortal. So, the first part of this chapter was devoted to the results of Buddha Yoga, in which you get the knowledge of the self, the knowledge of the soul, the knowledge of immortality. Thereafter, Sri Krishna says that, I will now give you the application of Buddha Yoga by which you can be free from action. Karma Bandhanam. The bandhana, the bondage that comes to you through action, it is that karma bandhan I shall be able to resolve for you. Now, what is that buddhi yoga as applied to this field by which you can be free? There are two ways of liberation from action. One is when you can, by the process of discrimination, arrive at the knowledge of the self and cease to act, then you are liberated from action. You cease to act in the immutability of the self. You just become quiet, don't do anything at all, you are free from action. But while doing action, also you can be free. And it is that process which Sri Krishna now is going to expound. How while doing action, you can still be free. So, all the rest that comes now and that which you started reading last time was connected with this aspect. While doing action, how can you be free from action? In doing so, first of all, Sri Krishna expounds the view which had by that time become very prevalent. Under the influence or under the appellation of Vedic works. As I told you last time, the Vedic knowledge
is a very profound knowledge. And Veda itself is a synthesis of knowledge, action and devotion. And Bhagavad Gita as a whole can be regarded as a summary of the entire process of the yoga of the Veda. But this integrality of the Vedic knowledge, by the time that we come to Mahabharata, had become obliterated, had become obscured. And the general impression was that by Veda is meant the secret of doing works by which our desires can be fulfilled. This is the way in which Veda had come to be recognized. In that process, the insistence was upon sankalpa. Every individual, whoever wants to move forward in life, should have a sankalpa. Sankalpa is a kind of a desire expressed firmly and clearly. Secondly, in that process, sankalpa had to be offered to the gods. Which god? Any god, because according to the Vedic knowledge, every god can take part of the function of any other god. Therefore, whichever god you feel inclined to, you offer. But also specifically any particular god who is known to be in charge of the fulfillment of the desire that you particularly have. If it is wealth, you have one particular god which is in charge of the wealth. If you want knowledge, it is another. If you want children, you have another. If you want fame, you have another. And so on. Many kinds of desires that you have. For the fulfillment of those desires, you have so many gods specially in charge of those desires or the domain in which you want to succeed. So you sacrifice a sankalpa, your will, to that god. The god in turn answers your sacrifice and bestows on you the objects of your desire. And by constant process of your giving to the gods and gods giving to you, the whole process of life should be conducted. This was the view at that time of what is called Karma Kanda of the Veda. So since now Sri Krishna is going to analyze the whole process of karma, he refers first to the view that was prevalent at that time in regard to karma. And he starts by saying that that process is a lower process. It is not the process that he is going to ultimately support. He starts by saying that this is the view of the people who want to remain confined to the ordinary movement of three modes of nature. And those who do not want to come out, but only want to arrive at Swarga, at the stage of a higher happiness and longer happiness, durable happiness. That is why Sri Krishna refers to it and says that this is the view of Veda Vada Rataha. Rata means one who is engaged. If so, Veda Vada, not only Veda, but Veda Vada, that is to say, this is the theory of the Veda, that it is by desire, by sankalpa, by offering of the sankalpa to the god in particular, who is responsible for satisfaction of that particular desire, and by the answer of the god to your sacrifice, that your desire can be fulfilled and you move forward. So those who believe in this, Sri Krishna refers to them as Veda Vada Rataha. and he speaks in a language of disapproval. Now, in contrast to that, Sri Krishna will now tell us that all those who follow this process are bound by desire. Although desire is to be sacrificed, but then it is to be sacrificed for the sake of success in desire. And then in return you get the answer and you move forward. The analysis of Sri Krishna, he says, is that if you, however, examine the whole process of karma, you will find that you have right to action, but no right to fruits of action. Whereas those people who are engaged in Vedavada, they want to possess the result, they want to claim the result, they want to enjoy the result, they want to cling to the result. And this is, according to Sri Krishna, a mistake and error. If, as a matter of fact, you have no right over the results, and still to go on claiming results, to cling to results, is based upon some kind of ignorance. That process itself is result of an ignorance. That is why the great and famous sentence, which is chapter number 2, verse number 47, which says, karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala hetuhu bhuhu ma te sangaha astu akarmani. This is the famous verse of the Bhagavad Gita. According to many, this is the greatest message of the Gita. But as we shall see later on, this is the first message, but not the last message of the Gita. This is not the Mahavakya of the Gita. This is the first Vakya. Mahavakya will come much later. But it is the starting point. The first great sentence of the Gita is this. To action alone hast thou the rights, but not to its fruits. Do not therefore act for the sake of the fruits of action. But at the same time, therefore, do not cling yourself to inaction. In one sentence you might say, one of the most important elements of karma yoga is expounded, based upon the truth that since for fruits of action you have no rights. This is the buddhi yoga tells you, when you discriminate all the aspects of karma, this is the one conclusion that you arrive at. Just as by buddhi you discriminate between the immobile and the mobile, that we saw already earlier. Similarly, when you analyze action by buddhi, you realize that you have no right over fruits of action. Once you do action, what result it will produce, it is no more in your hands. It is like the bullet which goes out of your gun. Once it has been thrown out, it is now no more in your hands as to what will happen. It's not in your hands. Even if you try to make it in your hands, it is not in your hands. Knowing this fact, it follows that you should not, therefore, cling to the fruits of action. It's not in your hands. And whenever you do the action, do not do the action for the sake of enjoyment of the fruits of action. Even if fruits are produced, you remain with regard to the fruits equal-minded. But do not cling to them, because it means that you have a right to them, which is not true. And the next few sentences which are here are expository of this basic proposition. We shall read them and then we shall come back again. to reflect upon that. The next one says, Yogastaha Kuru Karmani Sangam Tyaktva Dhananjaya Siddhi Asiddhyoho Samo Bhutva Samatvam Yoga Ujjati. In the last sentence we saw that even though you are not to cling to the fruits of action, even though the enjoyment of fruits of action is not to be the motive of your action, still you should continue to act. But how will you act then? If ultimately you are not going to enjoy the fruits of action, and normally people act only for the sake of that, and still you have to act, then how will you act? Therefore Sri Krishna says, Yogastaha Kuru Karmani. You do actions, but how? Yogastaha. Be settled in yoga. Sangam Tyaktva. Now this is a very important word, Sangam Tyaktva. You give up the attachment. The entire root of all bandhan, all bondage is Sangam. Attachment. The whole Gita's teaching is that all bandhan, all kind of bondage is because of attachments. Therefore, Sangam Tyaktva, Yogastha Kuru Karmani, give up the attachments. And when this will be done, then what will happen? Siddhi Asiddhi, whether you succeed or you fail, in regard to both of them, Samo Bhutva, you will become equal minded. And then he defines yoga. What is yoga? Because the first word of yoga, Kuru Karmani. You be settled in yoga and do actions. Now he says, what is yoga? Samatvam yoga ucchate. The equanimity, the complete equality of consciousness. In regard to honor or dishonor, success or failure, this state of consciousness itself is yoga. This is the definition of yoga, that if you can attain to a state where you are equal in regard to pleasure or pain, in regard to wealth or poverty, in regard to honor or dishonor, success or failure, then you are said to be in yoga. With that state of consciousness, do the karma. As I told you earlier, there are two ways of liberation. One is to attain to immobility and cease to work. The other one is, while doing work, you can still become liberated, provided this condition is fulfilled. You attain equality with regard to the fruits of action. And still if you can do the action, then you are free, even while doing action. Now comes a very important statement, and which ultimately shakes Arjuna, as a result of which the whole of the third chapter is triggered off. When you come to the third chapter, you will find that Arjuna starts by asking a question which is related to this statement. What is that? Durena hi avaram karma buddhi yogat dhananjaya buddhau sharanam anvichcha vipanaha falahetava. He says that Buddhi Yoga is much superior to action. Therefore, take resort to Buddhi, to the intelligent will. Those who seek after the desires, they are really pitiable, vipanaha. Those who desire for fruits of action, they are like beggars, they want certain things and they stand in the line of begging. Yakrupanaha phala hetava. Those who are desirous of phala, of fruits, they are kripanaha. They are miser, they are absolutely pitiable people. But you take resort to intelligent will. And this intelligent will is superior to action. In fact, naturally, Arjuna says in the third chapter, he says, O Shri Krishna, if buddhi is superior to action, then why don't you tell me to go to only intelligence and give up action altogether? If this is superior, if buddhi is superior, then why don't you ask me to do action and get to gauram karma, this kind of karma? If you just see the third chapter, the very first sentence, where Arjuna says, have you got third chapter? The very first verse. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna asks, jayasi chet karmanah te mata buddhihi janardana tat kim karmani ghore mam yojayasi keshava. Jayasi chet, jayasi means much more desirable. Karmanah, more desirable than karma, is buddhihi. If buddhi is much more important, much more preferable to action, then tat kim karmani ghore mam niyojayasi keshava. Then, oh Keshava, why do you niyojayasi, why do you enjoin me? Mam means me. Mam niyojayasi, why do you enjoin me? Kim karmani ghore, you are enjoining me into this ghora karma, into this horrible action. Now this question is related to this sentence which Sri Krishna puts here. And therefore this is a very important statement in the argument of the Gita. You must remember that Sri Krishna speaks like a good teacher who expounds the problems in a very regular, at the same time in a very mining manner. A good teacher does not explain everything in such a way that logically everything is said at once. That is because the student, his mind is limited and his concentration is upon a limited field. If immediately everything is told, then his mind is not able to understand it. Therefore, the answer is given which will immediately satisfy that particular question in the mind. But since it is not the whole of the teaching, certain threads will come out. Those threads are on which the student will ask further questions. And the teacher expects questions because he knows that he has not expounded the whole thing. So, some questions are bound to come up. And yet, he makes a statement deliberately so that the questions do come up. Prepares the student to ask further questions so that the greater knowledge can be given. So, while saying first of all that you give up the fruits of action, do not do any action for the sake of the fruits of action. Yet, he says, yet you continue to act. How do you act? Yogastaha, by settling yourself into yoga, you do the action. What is settling into yoga? Samatvam. You attain to a stage where you do not have siddhi, asiddhi, whether you succeed or you fail. In both the conditions, you will remain equal. With this state of mind, you act. Having said all this, now comes the bombardment, that this action is much inferior to knowledge. This action is inferior to knowledge. And that is why Arjuna's mind is now deflected. And he expounds his own deflection in the third chapter. As soon as he gets the chance of asking the question, he raises the question starting from here. Because Sri Krishna himself says that durena hi avaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Mere action is inferior, avaram means inferior, to buddhi yoga, to buddhi, to knowledge. Buddhau sharam anvichcha. Therefore, resort to buddhi. Kripanaha phalahetava. Those who are full of desire, they are like pitiable people. Now remember, we can anticipate something of the answer so that our own mind becomes quiet at this moment. Because this is a very important question. If knowledge is superior to action, then why should there be karma yoga at all? Why not jnana yoga alone? This is one of the issues of the Bhagavad Gita. If knowledge is superior to action, then why the process of karma yoga at all? Let us all do jnana yoga. Now you must first of all remember that Sri Krishna does not say that karma yoga is inferior to buddhi yoga. We must be very clear. He says karma, action is inferior to buddhi yoga. But he doesn't say karma yoga is inferior to buddhi yoga. But when you listen to the statements, perhaps you may not understand this distinction. Karma is inferior to knowledge, but karma yoga is not inferior to knowledge or to yoga of knowledge. Secondly, karma yoga itself becomes powerful only when you know that in the hierarchy of forces of knowledge, action and devotion, because these are only three forces in the world. If you analyze the psychology of a human being, you find there are only three tendencies in human being. Cognitive, connective, affective. If you read any book on psychology, you'll find that psychologists all over the world agree that human tendencies are threefold. Cognitive, connective, affective. Cognitive is the tendency to know. Connective is the tendency to act. Affective is the tendency to feel. In the totality of the whole psychology of human being, these are the only three powers. Now, in these three powers, there is a relationship. What is the relationship? Cognition is always superior to affection and conition. Conation is always inferior to cognition. Affection is both the crown of cognition and conation and also the inspiring force of the highest knowledge and the highest action. This is a very important statement, so let us dwell upon it. Because the entire relationship of Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, which is the synthesis of which is the whole teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, rests upon this interrelationship between these three tendencies. We must know that the aim of the Bhagavad Gita is to resolve the problem of life. The problem that Arjuna raises is an incidental question, because Arjuna is a symbolic of the problem that life confronts with to everybody in the world. You might say it is a typical example of every human being. At a certain time, the problem of life confronts you in the way in which it confronted Arjuna. Therefore, the answer to the question that Arjuna raises cannot be answered, cannot be given on a very flimsical grounds, which is something incidental or on the casual. It has to be answered on some very fundamental truths. The most serious problems of life can be resolved only when you know the fundamental truths of life. The answer that could ultimately satisfy Arjuna could be a yogic answer. Now this word yogic answer again needs to be defined. What is yogic answer? There are many kinds of answers. There are pragmatic answers, practical answers. There are theoretical answers. There are intellectual answers. There are answers which are temporary. There are answers which create further questions. There are final answers. full answers, durable answers. Now the full answers, durable answers, final answers are what may be called yogic answers. In the ultimate analysis, at the bottom of everything, if you really want to resolve any problem, Sri Krishna says, you go to the most fundamental things. Try to get highest possible knowledge. Survey the whole realm of knowledge. And then ask your question in the context of the realm of knowledge, total realm of knowledge. And then derive the answer out of it. It will be the truest answer, final answer, lasting answer. Now the question that Arjuna had put was such a question that neither pragmatic answer, nor theoretical answer, nor intellectual answer, nor philosophic answer, any temporary answer would have satisfied him. That is why Sri Krishna is obliged to give him an answer which is a yogic answer. And he says that your question is such that it can be answered only if you go to the most depth of everything. In that analysis, he first of all expounds what is called Buddhi Yoga. This is the first step in the answer. Now, why Buddhi Yoga to start with? Because our highest faculty in our consciousness is Buddhi. What are our faculties? Our faculties consist of senses, which Sri Krishna says are Indriyani. That is our lowest faculty in our entire complex. Behind Indriyas is the Manas, is the mind. There is a relationship between Manas and Indriyas. Manas is superior to Indriyas. Because if the mind is absent, even when the senses are cognizant of certain things, you will not cognize them. A mosquito might be biting me here, but if my mind is not attached to it, I will not notice it. I may look at the huge ocean, but if my mind is occupied with something else, I will not be able to visualize the ocean before me. I'll be somewhere else. So even if indriyas, even if the senses are looking at things, if mind is not enjoined with the senses, the senses will not be able to take cognizance of things. So, indriyas are connected with manas. Behind the manas is ahambhava, is the ego sense. Behind the ego sense is the buddhi. And beyond the buddhi is the one who really exercises the buddhi. Buddhehe parat purushah. Beyond the buddhi is purusha, the one who observes, who thinks, who discriminates. Now this is the whole line of our capacities. These capacities again are threefold, cognitive, connective, affective. Among all these faculties, if there is one supreme faculty which you can take hold of, through which you can try to arrive at a complete answer to any question is buddhi. That is why the Bhagavad Gita starts with buddhi yoga. So if you take hold of buddhi, and then he says, what is buddhi? Buddhi is a discriminating intelligence. The intelligence which is capable of standing behind all objects, all movement, is a special quality of the buddhi. Buddhi is that which can become aware of itself. Indriyas cannot become aware of themselves. Manas to some extent. Ahankara to some extent. But buddhi is the one faculty by which it can become aware of itself. When I am angry, I may not realize that I am angry. Afterwards I become aware that, oh, I was angry. The self-consciousness is best reflected in the operations of buddhi. That is why Sri Krishna first of all starts with buddhi. you take hold of the buddhi and recognize that this buddhi can discriminate between that which is mutable and that which is immutable. This is the first result that you can get if you really practice buddhi yoga. Now the question is, what is the definition of yoga? By buddhi yoga, certainly you can achieve the discrimination between mutable and immutable. But what is yoga? Now in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find several meanings of the word yoga. Even just now we saw samatvam yoga uchyate. Then there will be another afterwards, sometimes it will be said, karmasu kaushalam yoga. The yoga, the kaushala in karma is also yoga. Yoga karmasu kaushalam. That is also the definition of yoga. He speaks of Sankhya Yoga, he speaks of Karma Yoga, he speaks of Jnana Yoga, he speaks of Bhakti Yoga, he speaks of yoga as such. What is the meaning of yoga? The answer that is common to all the propositions which are here is, it is basically one pointed concentration. In this chapter you will see Sri Krishna makes a distinction between Vyavasayika Buddhi. The buddhi which is vyavasayika, that which is impelled by desires and activities of all kinds. And a buddhi which is chitta pragya, the buddhi which is stable, concentrated, ekagra. So, yoga is that intelligence which is concentrated. Buddhi yoga means when you can concentrate buddhi on a pure discrimination, you make your buddhi, which is normally flickering, but which is capable of steadiness. This is the speciality of buddhi. Buddhi also can flicker and does flicker. But by yoga, that is to say, by taking buddhi from the mobile movement, if you light a flame, and if there is air and wind, the lamp will constantly go on flickering. But if you remove all the air and all the disturbing movement of wind, then the flame will automatically be steady and the light will be perfect. Within limits, but light will be perfect because of the steadiness of the flame. Now, this is the possibility with regard to the buddhi. Indriyas, it is very difficult to make them steady. Manas, also very difficult to make it steady. The one element in us which is easier to deal with in making it steady is buddhi. That is why you start with buddhi yoga. And by buddhi yoga, you make your intelligence absolutely steady. When that intelligence is steady, then there is luminosity. In that luminosity, you will see everything as it is. Now, this seeing as it is very important. Normally, we do not see things as they are. We see things as if we are spectacled. If you have blue spectacles right from our birth attached to our eyes, we shall never know what is whiteness. What is redness? Because blue eyes will be always there and we will see everything blue. Now normally you may say that every human being is born with some kind of spectacles already fixed. That is why it is necessary to take out those spectacles and see things as they are. And the best way of doing it is to make the intelligence absolutely stable. Let it not flicker. And when it doesn't flicker, there will be immediate discrimination. This is the special, as soon as you see the light, everything will be clear. What is stable and what is sofa, immediately will be able to make a distinction. Similarly, as soon as the intellect is stabilized, the first thing you will see is that there is mutability and there is immutability. This is a distinction that you will see. And the intellect is completely steadied. It may take time, but if it is done, then this is the consequence you will get. You will realize the immutability. And by realizing immutability, you become free from mutability. Knowing the two conditions simultaneously and knowing the distinction between the two, you will be able to withdraw from mutability and go into immutability. And that is the moksha. The moment you can't come out of mutability and enter into immutability, you are liberated from mutability. You are no more unsteady. Now that is one way. Now Sri Krishna says the same Buddha Yoga, now you apply to action. And this is such a method that even while doing action, you feel free. It is that yoga which now Sri Krishna is expounding to us. While doing action, you still remain free from action. How to do that? So first proposition he makes is that you realize that in the field of action, there are two parts. There is a will and there is a seeking for a fruit of will. Or you might say there are three things. There is a will, there is an action which is meant to bring about a certain result. Now, in this process, as far as result is concerned, our tendency is not only to produce a result, but our attitude is to enjoy the result. In fact, you are doing action for the enjoyment of a result. So there is a subtle distinction between will, action, result, and desire to enjoy the result. Now, in this respect, Sri Krishna says, first of all, make a distinction between action and the result and see that on result you have no rights. As far as your decision to act is concerned, it is done in your mind. So let us say you have a right to action. But once the action is thrown into the field, then over the result you have no right at all. It happens automatically. Whatever happens, you cannot determine afterwards. So this is the first result of Buddhi Yoga. You know the distinction between action and result and how result is beyond you. Knowing this, you become free from the clutches of results or fruits of action. And then you arrive at a samatvam. The arrival of samatvam itself can be called yoga. Just as yoga is a concentration and which leads you to the steadiness of the flame, similarly, samatvam leads to the steadiness of action. Your activity normally, which is flickering all the time, now becomes steady. Your action becomes strong, powerful, because now there is no wavering in action. You are not troubled by the clinging to the desires and to the fruits of action. That action is karma yoga. An action which is action, not an unsteady action. An action which is action, to arrive at a stage where you can really act without unsteadiness, that is karma yoga. It's the first definition of karma yoga you get here.
In the action doesn't bring more of a perfect and a fruitful action.
Pardon? Again?
Action done with Buddhi Yoga. Isn't
this
most of the time
successful? Yes, of course. But the point is, remember, Sri Krishna does not say that you should not act. He only says, do not cling to the enjoyment of the fruits of action. In fact, the secret of every effective action is karma yoga. You cannot effectively act if you are not doing karma yoga.
That's what I meant.
That's right.
Another thing, as you said, to resort to buddhi yoga, that's the outcome of tapogun.
That's right.
So that will be governed by the position.
That's right. You cannot give this advice to one who is not already on the level where he can make a transition from rajas to sattva, or is already in sattva. This advice Sri Krishna gives to Arjuna because Arjuna is already sattvic.
That is why this advice is given to him.
Pardon?
True, because sattva is never free from rajas and tamas, but predominantly sattvic. That is why his whole question arises, because he is in search of dharma. He is asking what is right, what is wrong. Only sattvic mind asks this question. Rajasic mind doesn't ask this question. Tamasic mind doesn't ask this question. His recoil was tamasic, but his question is not tamasic. You know, your question is so important, because we often say that Gita is relevant to our times and is relevant to the people of the world. And it is true that since this whole teaching is addressed to Arjuna, who was a master man, who was a representative of the humanity at that time, he was Vibhuti, he was sattvic. Therefore, this kind of teaching is relevant to him. How can we say it's relevant to everybody? And yet, towards the end of the Bhagavad Gita, when you come to the close of the Gita, Sri Krishna says, what is true to one man can be true to the whole of humanity, provided that somebody really wants. There is only condition towards the end, it is left out. That anybody says that even if a man who is very wicked and evil, if he turns resolutely, then he will be liberated and uplifted. Therefore, it is, although this is given to Arjuna, who is sattvic in his mentality, and therefore you might say it is relevant to sattvic people in the world, and you cannot teach everybody. But Sri Krishna towards the end says that even if a man is wicked, even if he is mudha, but if he turns resolutely, then this teaching will be relevant to him, because then he will be uplifted. And in that sense, therefore, you might say that the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is relevant to anybody who asks the question sincerely. Everybody in the world, therefore. Anybody who sincerely wants, whatever his present situation, whatever he has done in the past, if now, today, he says, I really want a true solution, then this teaching is the relevant. Now to come back to what we are saying, when your action becomes steady, is real action, and no more reaction, no more inaction, no more partial action, but a real action, that is steadiness of action, it becomes real karma yoga. When buddhi yoga was really buddhi yoga, when buddhi becomes steady, similarly here action becomes steady. By what power this action becomes steady? By the power of buddhi yoga. If intelligence does not become steady, karma will not become steady. This is the relationship between the two. If you want to make your action steady, the condition will be that your intelligence must be steady. That is why he says that karma is inferior to the yoga of intelligence. That is the condition. Mere action by itself will never lead you to liberation from action. Mere action. We are all doing action all the time. Doesn't mean that we are all the time getting liberated. You can become liberated while doing action only when first you become steady in your intelligence. This is the relationship between intelligence and action. Why is this relationship? Basically, if you go still beyond all these propositions, you realize that ultimate reality is Satchitananda. We have taken this subject at length. Ultimate reality is Satchitananda. If you examine the whole world, which is a movement, you see behind it a pure stable. The pure stable is a pure existence. The pure existence is immutable. But he is not only immutable. He is not only sat. He is also chit. And chit has two aspects, consciousness and force. So, now the logic is, sat first, chit second, force third. Now action is force. Now force depends upon chit. Chit is consciousness, of which buddhi is a fundamental characteristic, power, at a certain level. Buddhi is not the highest power from the point of consciousness. Beyond buddhi also there are many other powers, but in our complex, buddhi is the highest power, nearest to consciousness. So buddhi, which represents chit, is higher than action or force, and higher than chit is sat, is the immutable. Now this being the ultimate structure of the world, the powers also have got their interrelationship accordingly. If you are already stabilized, absolutely stable, then you do not even need chit and force. Because that is the most primary thing, basic thing. Being settled in the pure state of being, you are capable of conscious force. So you might say, conscious force is your instrument. You are the master. The sat, wherever there is sat, it is the master. That is the relationship. The relationship between sat and chit is that chit is one with sat, sat is one with chit, and yet sat is more than the chit. This is the special kind of relationship that exists between sat and chit. Sat is the most fundamental. Essence is most fundamental. Whatever manifests the essence is subordinate. It comes out of the sat, of the essence. Therefore, manifestation is always subordinate to the stable. If the stability goes away, even the movement will ultimately fritter away. It is only on the basis of inexhaustible, unmovable, absolute self-existence that all movement can have as basis. So movement is always dependent upon the sat. Sat does not depend upon the movement. Similarly, chit has two aspects, consciousness and force. Consciousness is more primary in relation to the force, shakti. That's how you use the word chit shakti. Chit is primary, shakti is secondary. Chit can exist without force. But force can never exist without the chit. Therefore, action is always inferior to chit. And this is what Sri Krishna says, that action is inferior to knowledge. But therefore, it does not follow, therefore, that action is nothing. Although it is inferior, it does not mean that it is nothing and therefore to be thrown away. In the totality of reality, all elements are needed. Sat is needed, chit is needed, action is needed, ananda is needed. When you combine sat and chit, the union of the two is ananda. Therefore, all movement, all creativity arises out of ananda. Now you find therefore the reality is one, but it is triple. Reality is one, but it is sat, chit and ananda. It is because of this that we have got so many faculties, and these faculties relate themselves primarily to sat or to chit or to ananda. And their interrelationships are established on the basis of the original, the primary sat, chit and ananda. The powers of ananda are all subordinate to the powers of jit and sat. But also, ananda is always a culmination. It is dependent, but ultimately all of them culminate in ananda. There is a speciality or privilege of ananda. Ananda is always a culmination, is a crown. When you do all your action perfectly, when you really become be, then there is prasada. There is a complete happiness and complete deliverance. Shanti, sukham, prasadam. This is the condition that you arrive at when you completely be and completely act. When you are completely steadied, when you are yoga yukta, when you become completely engaged in yoga, then this is the result, ananda is the culmination. Now this question Sri Krishna will answer in the third chapter. But at the moment he simply makes a statement which bombards Arjuna for the time being. So we come back to this 49. Durena hi avaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya buddhau sharanam anvichya kripanaha palahetava. O conqueror of wealth, karma is far inferior to the practice of buddhi yoga. Therefore, seeking refuge in the intellect, perform selfless actions. Because those who want to enjoy the fruits of their actions are kripanaha, are pitiable. Sri Krishna does not stop here to expound why a karma is inferior to knowledge. But he continues, because his main purpose here is to emphasize how while doing action you can be free. And the one important thing is that you cannot be free unless you regard karma to be inferior to knowledge, and unless you make buddhi yoga and you make your buddhi steady, then your karma will become steady. So he says, buddhi yogaha jahati iha ube sikrita duskrite tasmad yogaya yujyasva yogaha karmasu kaushalahu. So he says, now you become united with buddhi. And when you do that, you will be able to give up the distinction between sikrita and duskrita. You will no more be bewildered by what is right action and what is wrong action. Therefore, unite yourself with yoga. And when you do that, your yoga will, your karma will become kaushalam. And that efficiency of action, as you rightly pointed out, that when you do real action by yoga, your action becomes most effective. Do not therefore neglect to do work. Do not therefore you do work negligently. Do not merely do because of duty I am doing it. I have to be here up to 5 o'clock, I will be here up to 5 o'clock, then I will go away. That is only a sense of duty, but it is not kaushalam, it is not proficiency. It is not your complete perfection of action. Now let us dwell upon this sentence very importantly, because sikrita diskriti, obey, jahati, you will be able to abandon the right and the wrong. Now this is a very difficult sentence. We have to go back to the question of Arjuna. When Arjuna started his argument as to why he will not fight, the sting of the argument was, I want to do the right action, I want to avoid the wrong action. And I find that if I fight it will be wrong action, therefore not fighting is for me the right action. That was his conclusion. If you take the whole argument, the totality of the argument is only this. If I fight, there will be lot of evils which will be produced. I want to avoid all the evil. I want to do the right thing. Therefore, I will not fight. And that is the right action. So, Sri Krishna now dwells upon it and says, you are distinguishing between the right action and the wrong action. But I am giving you the key by which even this question will not arise. You are troubled because you want to decide what is right, what is wrong. But I will give you the key by which this question will not arise. Jahati. You will be able to abandon both the questions, what is right and what is wrong. If you do this, buddhi yoga, if you really become completely concentrated on your buddhi, and if you do the action perfectly well, then you will go beyond the question what is right, what is wrong. What is good action, what is evil action. And this is true for everybody. You just apply this. Make your mind completely steady. You arrive at a samatvam. You say, whatever the result, I'll be able to bear it. Whatever the result, I'm doing this action. Whatever the result, I'll bear it. But you do your action fully well. Perfectly well. If you do it, then the action that you will do will be independent of right or wrong. You not call it right action, you not call it wrong action. It will be the action which will be able to avoid the distinction between the right and the wrong. It is the action. This is true of everybody in any situation where you have a doubt whether it is right or wrong and you are very, very confused. Then this is the one alchemy given by Sri Krishna. Take whatever action you are doing. You are not sure whether it is right or wrong, but whatever the results of that action, you decide to take them absolutely freely and say that you will not be afflicted. Same kritva. But do the action perfectly well, without negligence. Don't do merely as a duty, but really do it thoroughly. Then you will have no problem of right or wrong.